Well, Harry, another roller coaster week in FPL with benchings for the likes of Phil Foden and João Pedro, but actually James Maddison making what could be a surprise start for that Spurs team at the weekend after he was heavily sold at the start of the week. We've had Bruno, we've had Rashford, Saka, all rewarding those that kept the faith, and a player I know you're going to want to talk about today, Raheem Sterling, turning back the FPL clock and reminding us all how good he can be in FPL. So, how was game week three for you, first and foremost, Harry?
Yeah, thank you. It was good. I got 56 points overall. I do sort of hold my head in my hands because I have Udogi first on my bench with 12 points.
So
it's one of those that I'm happy with what the game week gave, but it feels like what it could have been if I'd had him in my starting 11. But happy I held faith with a lot of the assets. So I still have Bruno Fernandes, Marcus Rashford, Bukayo Saka all in my lineup. So happy that I decided to give them all one more week. How about you?
Yeah, I did pretty well, actually. 64 points. So it was the midfield that really shone through. Same as you. So I had Maddison, I had Diaby, Bruno Fernandes, Saka, and even Phil Foden chipping in with, I think, what we can describe as a bit of a jammy assist for Rodri's goal. But nevertheless, still points aplenty across the midfield. And then ably supported by Haaland captain and Chilwell at the back. So yeah, a pretty good week. Lots to discuss, no doubt about it. And I think you are not going to be the only FPL manager that kept some points on the bench. I think there's a few Matty Cashes, you doggies, and maybe even some Gustos on the bench as well. So plenty of points all round, I think. So 64, pretty happy with that. But as I say, lots to discuss. I think we should start with your team, though. I think it makes absolute sense to go there. Cast your mind back to Friday evening. Chelsea 3, Luton 0. And on the back of that West Ham result in game week 2, Pochettino's boys needed to, they needed a performance against Luton, didn't they? Needed a reaction. And the Chelsea faithful got it. And I must admit, I was watching that game. I kind of went into game week 3 going, right, I'm going to scout Jackson, I'm going to be scouting Raheem Sterling, I'm going to be scouting Gusto, I'm going to be having a look at how that Chelsea dynamic looks, ready to act in game week 4, because the fixtures for Chelsea still look pretty good going forward. But if you're an FPL manager that went on any of those three early, you got the points that you deserve. So congrats. What did you make of the Chelsea performance, and in particular, the FPL assets that we're looking at?
Yeah, so it's been quite a mixed season for us so far. We had a performance against Liverpool in game week 1, which we thought was pretty good at the time. We then lost to West Ham, which at the time was a disappointing result, although they look like they're playing very well, and we'll get onto them in a moment. So the performances haven't been bad, but we did feel like we needed some points on the board, and we did expect at home to Luton that we would get that. And we did perform very well. I brought in Jackson into my team for Ollie Watkins this week, looking at the fixtures going forward. Happy with that. At halftime, I was not best pleased with that. I think it was a tale of two halves, particularly for Jackson, but for Chelsea as well. First half, he was very isolated, didn't get many touches of the ball. His first touch wasn't great as well. So when he did get it, it was quite disappointing. The second half, they got him involved in the play. He links it really well. As we've seen in preseason, we knew that was going to be the case. He linked with Nkunku really well, and we saw it going into the second half of this game. Raheem Sterling is the big one. And as you said in the intro, it feels like he turned back the tide of his FPL years and some of his performances that we saw at Manchester City. My little bit of a reservation is, how long is he going to turn back that tide for, right? We've seen him at Chelsea be a sort of flash in the pan. He's had some great games, but the consistency has never been there. If he could perform like we know he can, like he did in this, particularly in the second half of that game, but actually his first goal as well, consistently throughout the season, he'd be great for us and he'd be a great FPL asset. It's just whether I think he can sort of pull out the consistency that maybe we've seen from him in the past. But if there's ever a time to do it, I think these fixtures are a great time to do it. And a lot of us are looking at potential midfield transfers, and he's probably either number one or number two alongside a certain James Maddison that I might be bringing into my team this week. So really impressed with us going forward. Defensively, we didn't get tested too much by Luton, but there were still issues there defensively. So I'm not so certain on us defensively still. The fixtures are there. I think one defender is probably enough, but Gusto and Chilwell do have the attacking threat going forward that maybe mean that a double up is okay. But I'm really focusing on us going forward in attack on Jackson and Sterling, I think, at the moment.
Yeah, do you know what? It's interesting that you were... I expected you to be all in on Chelsea after that result, but there's a little bit of reservation there. It gives me some pause for thought. Whenever I listen to a fan from the club, it always gives me food for thought. But I have to say, I thought And I know, you know, the fixture, it was Luton at home. Chelsea obviously expecting to get the win and needed the reaction after the West Ham game. I agree with you on Jackson, by the way, first half. But, you know, by half time, I was thinking, you know, I'm not going to be getting this guy in FPL because it, you know, it seemed as if the ball bounced off his foot too many times, that, you know, he didn't have the control of it throughout the game. Looks a little bit like a rough diamond, if you don't mind me saying. I think he's definitely, I think he's a quality player and he definitely links the play well, like you say, but it just wasn't at it. It was almost like trying a bit too hard in that first half. And I don't know what Pochettino said to him at halftime, almost a bit kind of like, maybe calm down and just play your game. Because second half, he came out a completely different player.
Yeah.
And what he tends to do, in a bit of a kind of Ollie Watkins stroke, maybe Roberto Firmino kind of way, the players around him are really benefiting from the work that he does and the strength that he's got up there. And we saw that, obviously, with Sterling coming into the game. Now, Sterling himself, I must admit, I am now looking at him, given that the fixtures going forward look pretty good. And I understand what you're saying about the reservations. But here's a player who, throughout his whole career, is used to playing a game every sort of 3 or 4 days. He's had European football. He's obviously played a lot of games at international level with England. It's game after game after game after game. All of a sudden, he's playing in this Chelsea side. He's got one game a week. So all this, you know, the fact that he's a little bit maybe older than some of the other players in the team, I genuinely think Pochettino's put his arm around him and said, hey, you're going to be one of our senior leaders in this team now. And certainly the way that he took that goal, to me, that smelt like leadership. You know, he was like, I'm going to score this goal. And he could have had more goals in that game again. So both, I think, are on the radar for sure. The challenge I have with Sterling, I think, is that actually from a midfield perspective in FPL, we've got so many options, haven't we? My midfield looks pretty good. I'm pretty happy with it. I said at the top of the pod how they've all returned for me this week. Who do I get rid of if I'm going to bring in Sterling? Yeah, I look at Jackson. I go, well, okay, well, I've got maybe João Pedro and I've got 4.5 in my forward line. So I could make a space for Jackson, right? Whereas I'm not sure I could make a space for Sterling. Would you subscribe to that from an FPL perspective? Would you say, well, more likely to go for Jackson because we've got fewer options up front rather than the midfield where we've got options aplenty, right?
Yeah, definitely. It's slightly different for me. I have what feels like a Martinelli problem in my midfield.
Okay.
I think a lot of people will be looking at something similar. His performances haven't been where maybe we want them to, and we'll talk about Arsenal later on, but I think I might be looking to move him out going forward, particularly because they play Manchester United this week as well. So I have a space in my midfield, but generally I think people with Watkins, people with João Pedro, there is a space up front that people will be looking to move sideways. The only caveat I would add, and it applies to a lot of the Chelsea assets, is what system we are going to play. So in pre-season, we didn't play a single game with a back five.
Yeah, yeah.
And then Nkunku got injured in the final game and we went into game week one and suddenly there was the back five. And this has made Chilwell and Gusto a better option, but it's also made Raheem Sterling a better option as well because he plays as sort of part of a front two. He means he comes more central. If it ever got to the point where he suddenly thinks, no, we're going to go back to that back four that I tried and tested and actually did pretty well with in pre-season, it would mean Sterling would be slightly wider. It would mean Gusto would be slightly less further forward. It would mean the same thing for Ben Chilwell as well. Now, actually, I think it's worked pretty well, and I don't think that will be the case, but I don't think it's impossible, which is, again, a slight reservation. But I look at Sterling as a Martinelli replacement, and the big thing about him is, compared to maybe James Maddison, who's my other asset, who, although Maddison scored, I feel like Sterling has that goal threat, right? I think Maddison will pick up a lot of assists this season, but I do question about how many goals he's going to score. Whereas I look at Sterling and think, if we're scoring goals, it's him or Jackson. And if he doesn't score it, the chances are he's going to get the assist. The involvement is really, really good from Raheem Sterling. So it feels like one of those that we talk about flexibility and having to forget, you know, how players have performed in recent seasons when buying an FPL asset. We've seen it before when Jesse Lingard went to West Ham, for example, having to forget them previously. It feels like I need to do that a little bit with Raheem Sterling and forget maybe what I've seen with him in a Chelsea shirt last season and buy him on the merit of what I've seen so far this season as well.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. And you've touched on James Maddison there. We definitely got to talk about Spurs and their new look system under Ange Postecoglou. Looking very good, isn't it? Looking very good. We'll come to them in a minute, but I do want to just go to the Martinelli piece that you just mentioned there. So we're all talking about how we're going to get Sterling and Maddison in our teams, and you're thinking about taking out who I would consider to be a pretty good asset in Gabriel Martinelli, particularly with Gabriel Jesus fit again for Arsenal. I think Martinelli tends to play better with Gabriel Jesus rather than Eddie Nketiah or Trossard or anybody else up there in that false nine position. So let's just go there. Let's talk about a result that you know, I didn't see coming. I thought it was going to be a home win for Arsenal this weekend at home to Fulham. You know, Saka doing the business again and getting the penalty. And Nketiah's form continues to be good. So maybe Gabriel Jesus doesn't just walk straight back into that team. But props to Fulham, right? You know, even at 10 men and 2-1 down, Paulinho, who I thought was fantastic, by the way, not necessarily looking at him in FPL, maybe, although you might have some opinion on that. Talk to me about the FPL assets in this game then. So Saka, Odegaard, and in particular, in your team, Martinelli, and why you're considering selling for someone like Madison or Sterling.
Yeah, so it does feel, although Fulham, you know, have come out with a point here, it still feels like the Arsenal assets are the ones we're focusing on from an FPL point of view. I also have Saliba in my defence, and it was expected more than a single point from Saliba going into this game. I really was, given how Arsenal had performed, and he'd performed in the first couple of games as well. Defensively, they become a slight issue over the next few because they have Manchester United and Spurs at home in the next three. Their two easier games, I think, of Burnley and Everton, are both away from home as well, which Arsenal actually do okay away from home, but they're not necessarily fixtures that I look at and think I'm certain of clean sheets in them.
Tons of goals and clean sheets. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, it's more the attacking assets that I start to look at and think maybe I can get some returns there. So Saliba's one I'll probably hold on to. I've got enough sort of depth in my defence that I don't have to play him every week, but not necessarily one that I see producing loads of points over the next few weeks. Going forward's interesting. The penalty dynamic develops again at Arsenal. Because of course,
what a great narrative that is, right?
Honestly, Odegaard took it in game week two. And after the game, it feels like Arteta and Odegaard sort of said, oh, well, it is normally Saka. And actually, we don't want to come out and criticize anyone for taking the penalty or Saka for giving it up. But it feels like Saka is the penalty taker still at Arsenal, given he'd taken one in game week three. Maybe it was a little bit of, he was playing against an English keeper in game week two and he didn't, you know, maybe Johnston at Palace had seen that a little bit more. So I still favour Saka. I have Saka and Martinelli in my squad. I'm going to be holding on to Saka going forward just in case he is penalties. I think his open play threat is still pretty good. Martinelli is one that, yes, he gets better when Jesus is in the team, but with Jesus back, his minutes drop, I think, but he is better for the minutes that he plays because it means that although they don't necessarily rotate together, it means Nketiah and Trossard are both likely to sit on the bench, which means Trossard isn't going to come on for sort of their striker anymore. He's going to come on only in that left wing position because Nketiah will likely be coming on up front. So the early sub does look like it's going to be the case for Martinelli. He is a great asset when he's playing well, but I'm not being massively impressed with where he's been playing and his positioning in the first few. He got that great assist in game week one, but I also look at my team and think there's a lot of midfielders I want to buy and I've got to find one of them to sell.
Yeah, yeah.
And at the moment, he's bottom of the pile with a difficult fixture against Manchester United this week. So if it was any other week and he had a decent enough fixture, I'd probably hold on to him. But I feel like there are so many appealing midfielders that I need to find a transfer. And it was the same last week. I sold Watkins to Jackson. I was sort of finding a transfer to make in my team because I didn't really want to do anything else. And it feels a little bit like that again, that I'm finding someone I need to sell. And at the moment, Martinelli just happens to be that player.
Well, this is the thing, isn't it, Harry? We've got all the shiny new toys, haven't we? We've got Sterling performing well. We've got Madison performing well. Such is the kind of fickle nature of FPL right now in terms of jumping around on different assets. And it's still kind of unpredictable. We're still only in game week three. So, you know, every week there seems to be a different narrative and a different new midfielder that we want. I tend to agree with you in general. For sure, Saka is in my team and is going nowhere, particularly while Arteta continues with this kind of Thomas Partey at right back experiment, right? Because what I noticed in the game is that Saka is being asked to do absolutely no defending, right? That's part of the reason I think that Arteta's going with this Thomas Partey experiment is because he is sitting there and kind of inverting, but also slipping back into that right defensive slot and just freeing Saka up. Some of his touch maps and heat maps over the weekend, you know, he is in the box. He's everywhere you want to be from an FPL perspective, Saka. So if you've got him, definitely a hold. He's on penalties as a bonus. No issue with selling him whatsoever. But I agree with you. On the other side, maybe Martinelli does become one of those players that you look at in terms of selling for either a Madison or a Sterling. I sort of feel like Madison is so important to the way that Spurs are attacking right now. He is at the heart of everything, and we're going to talk about them in just a second. And I feel like Sterling as well is really benefiting from the new number nine he's got around him. Jackson is putting the work in and making sure that Sterling is benefiting from the result of that work. And of course, he's, you know, like I said before, only got one game a week. So there's lots of reasons to go for Sterling. And I just wonder whether Martinelli and Arsenal, the points are shared around a bit more, aren't they? And I get you, that assist in game week one against Forest was so good, the little back heel. Did he mean it? I don't know. But nevertheless, we're going to say yes and say it was a really good assist. But outside of that, you know, what have we seen from Martinelli that makes us go, okay, well, he's as nailed on as Saka in our teams? I'm not sure that he is. And with some of the other midfielders coming to the fore, like Maddison and Sterling and Bowen as well, who look really good for West Ham, and even James Ward-Prowse you could maybe put in there as well. There are lots of now good options, and maybe, you know, the double up in the Arsenal midfield, given they've got the Man United game coming up, maybe isn't the right thing to do. I agree with you. I think the less said about the defensive situation at Arsenal, the better. I've got Gabriel in my team still from game week one. There's an issue that I do need to fix. And I think going into game week three, I was quite keen to kind of move him sideways to Saliba because I fancied the clean sheet. So as soon as the Fulham goal went in after about whatever it was, 56, 57 seconds, I was pretty happy as a non-Arsenal defence owner in FPL. But now Gabriel's got to go. Gabriel, you know, Gabriel has to move. And I'm probably going to move him sideways and save a bit of money to either Gusto, who we mentioned before, or maybe the new wonder kid that Spurs have got at wingback. So Udogi, who got a brilliant assist for Kulusevski's goal at the weekend. It is time to talk about them. We've talked about Maddison. We've touched on Udogi. There are plenty of assets from Spurs that are now on the radar. Even Dejan Kulusevski put in another very good performance, all action performance, in my opinion, at Bournemouth at the weekend. Got his goal finally, so got off the mark. But I'd like your opinion on all of them. And in particular, Richarlison as well, who, when Harry Kane left the club, I think a lot of FPL managers, me included, were tempted to go there. So I think going into game week one, there was a lot of narrative about who do you go for, Richarlison or Maddison. But I think it's clear now. I think it's clear now, isn't it? You've got to go for the England man, right?
Yeah, I agree. And I think Kulusevski is an interesting one. I think he can sort of put his hat in the ring as a bit of a differential, being slightly cheaper than James Maddison, particularly with the setup that they're going to play. He looks like he's going to be in there every week. We had issues last season with who was it going to be? Was it going to be Kulusevski? Was it going to be Richarlison playing? But yeah, I agree. I don't think Richarlison is an asset. And I think if you've got him, I don't think it's impossible that they start one of the upcoming games with actually the system that they change to when he comes off, and that is putting Son up front, and that's probably bringing Perisic in on that left wing. So I think Richarlison is actually probably a sell, and I don't think it's the worst thing to move sideways to go and actually correct the Spurs asset that you've got. Of course, they've got Burnley this week and then Sheffield United at home in game week five as well. Two really nice fixtures over the next two. James Maddison, I really like. The one thing that concerns me with James Maddison, and it's going to sound ridiculous given he scored in game week three, is the goal threat that he actually has. I feel like he is going to get 15 plus assists this season. He's going to be so involved for Spurs. Of course, they have no Europe, so there's going to be that rotation that we've potentially had. And, you know, when we look at some of those Arsenal assets, Martinelli adding his rotation risk when they play in the Champions League as well. James Maddison, I just think he's going to be playing almost 90 minutes every game. He's so involved, but I don't see him scoring loads of goals for Spurs with the way that they're playing, with them having a sort of central number nine ahead of them. Now, if they decide and play Son in front of him, then that might change it, because I think Son will move around a little bit more. It might allow Maddison to get into the box a little bit more. That's potentially why I favor Sterling over Maddison, not because I think the number of returns that they're going to get is any different. But I think Sterling's returns are going to be more weighted towards goals, whereas Maddison, I feel like we'll be picking up a lot of assists. That being said, everything Spurs do seems to have James Maddison involved at the moment. I've been so impressed with how quickly he's fit into that Spurs side and how well they're playing as a team as well. So he's definitely on the radar. It will be him or Sterling. I can't say which of them it's going to be, which of them it's going to be at the moment. Do I want a triple up on Chelsea to add to the pain of watching them as a fan anyway? Maybe not. But yeah, big fan of James Maddison. Kulusevski is differential, but I don't see any reason to not buy James Maddison if you are looking for one of them. Defensively is interesting. Udogi is probably the one that people will go to now. Of course, he picked up an assist and his attacking positioning has been really good so far this season. It's not a surprise that he's starting to get returns.
Yeah, absolutely.
Van de Ven coming in at the sort of same price is interesting. And people were starting to sort of murmur about him. He looked really good for bonus points. His sort of baseline bonus is looking really nice. But as soon as people saw that Udogi was so advanced and getting that assist at the same price, likely to rise as well, I'm sure, before the game week four deadline, looks like a real sure buy at the moment. And it does feel like a lot of people were concerned potentially about rotation at that left back spot, but it looks like Ange sees that Perisic is more of a left wing than a left back at the moment. It looks like Udogi seems to be pretty comfortably that sort of first choice at left back. Whether he plays 90 minutes or not, we don't know. He hasn't played that many of them so far this season. And he did come off, worth mentioning, after 80 minutes in game week 3. Did go down, I think, off the ball. He walked off the pitch absolutely fine. He looked okay once he got up, but he was down for a period of time. So if you are looking at buying Destiny Udogie, I would just wait until the end of the week just to make sure that there's nothing to worry about with that injury.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And we've got League Cup fixture, haven't we? Our Spurs have got a League Cup fixture coming up. So we are going to hear from Ange Postecoglou about Udogie's availability. So yeah, hold fire on that one. I tend to agree with you on Van de Ven, by the way. I noticed that on set pieces, he's the one that Maddison kind of looks for as well. Doesn't always reach him, but he's the one that I think, genuinely, I think there's a goal for Van de Ven in the next sort of 4 or 5 weeks. I couldn't tell you where it's going to come, but you just feel like his underlying positioning from corners and some of the attacking threat that I think he's got, there's a goal there somewhere. It wouldn't surprise me for Van de Ven to pick up a goal in the clean sheet and maybe a sort of double-digit haul somewhere in the next sort of 3 to 4 weeks. So if you want him as a bit of a differential over Udogie, I don't mind it. But as you rightly say, the young man, the Udogie, he's getting forward so well. And the way that the tenacity he showed to reach that ball, to get that cross in for Kulusevski, he had absolutely no right to get that. He had no right to get that, but it was a brilliant assist. On the Maddison thing, though, he's great, isn't he? He's in my team right now, and I have got absolutely no intention of moving him out at the minute. He is so central to everything Spurs are doing, as you rightly say. They look a different side in terms of the way they attack. Obviously, I know a lot of Spurs fans. Obviously, the other half of FPL family, Sam, gives me a lot of feedback about how it feels to be a Spurs fan right now. Ange is bringing the joy back to that football team. Let me tell you, the way, did you see the celebration, right? Even the Maddison celebration, he's got one either side of him. They're throwing imaginary darts at the camera and stuff, right? You wouldn't have had that under Conte. And I just wonder whether, you know, someone like Ange Postecoglou, clearly a very emotionally intelligent manager, has come in. He's put his arm around a few of them. You know, a great example of that is Bissouma, right? I mean, he's not an FPL asset, Bissouma, but the way that he has now stepped up to be that CDM for Spurs, he was unbelievable at the weekend. So don't go out and buy Bissouma in FPL, because I don't think he's going to get you too many points. But the way that he frees up Pape Sarr, the way that he frees up Maddison to go and do his thing, those are the sorts of players we want to be looking at in FPL. And Maddison, for me, he had an XGI of 1.52 over the weekend. And I appreciate his goal was pretty close to the goal. So his XG of 1.08 is going to be largely driven by the chance and the goal that he scored. But listen, Harry, he was getting into all those positions. He was actually tracking back a little bit more than perhaps I would have liked from an FPL perspective. But I think that was tactical based on the way that Bournemouth set up. If you look at some of his touch maps, he had 47% of his touches, Maddison, within his own half, defensive half, and 53% in the attacking half. So he was still slightly biased towards being in the final third from a Spurs attacking perspective. But if you look at those same stats in game week 1 and 2, he was still heavily biased towards the attacking half. So I wouldn't necessarily be too put off by the fact that he was tracking back and doing a lot of defensive work against Bournemouth. I think that was tactical. Going forward, given that the Spurs fixtures look pretty good, given that he's central to everything, I think he's definitely one to have. I was almost going to say must have then, but I'm not going to say that. But he's definitely one to have. And if you said to me, you've got to pick one or the other, Sterling or Maddison right now, I think I'd go for Maddison. You know, I think I disagree with you on the Sterling thing. And that's not me saying Sterling's a bad pick, because he's not. Everything that we said about him stands. But of the two, if I only had one transfer to make and I had to bring in just one of them, I think I'd go Maddison, you know.
Yeah, it's a difficult decision that I have definitely got to make. One final shout out is to Sarr in the Spurs midfield. 4.5 midfielder. I'm not saying that he's an FPL asset to start every week, but if anyone is looking to play a midfield four and needs a cheap midfield, he's picked up a goal and an assist so far in his two starts so far this season. So probably the 4.5, unless I'm completely forgetting someone else, that you'd probably be looking at, given he's actually getting quite advanced at certain times. Now, his goal in game week 2 was a late entry into the box against Manchester United, but still 4.5, getting attacking returns, you can't really complain at that.
Like it. Yeah, I like it. So we've spoken about the midfield. We're struggling to get Sterling and Maddison and all the other midfielders that we want in our team. We've spoken about Nicholas Jackson as well from a Chelsea perspective. Let's talk about another forward that caught my eye over the weekend. Sheffield United 1, Manchester City 2. And of course, Harry Haaland catches my eye. Of course, he does most weeks. Missed the penalty. Then looked pretty relieved to get that header, didn't he? Given that he missed the penalty before. But let's not spend too much time talking about Erling Haaland, because many, many FPL managers have got him. His effective ownership in the game was very, very high and captained by a lot of FPL managers this weekend. But I would like to talk about his partner in crime, Julian Alvarez, who had as many attempts as Erling Haaland with 8 this game week. And his chances created was 4 in that game, which was second only to Grealish. So listen, he's putting in some pretty decent numbers, Julian Alvarez. And if you want to go elsewhere in the Manchester City attack, I bought in Foden this week, not expecting him to be ill. I think that was the diagnosis from Pep, right, in terms of his benching. It wasn't that he's got an injury, it's that he had a little bit of a bit of illness coming into the game, so he didn't want to risk him, but only played him if he needed him, comes on, gets the assist. I'm pretty happy about that. So not in any way thinking of moving off of Foden from that perspective, but if you are only invested in Haaland and you are thinking about how you might want to invest in the Manchester City attack, given that the fixtures look pretty good over the next few weeks, and you don't want to spend one of those sacred midfield spots on Phil Foden, then maybe have a look at Julian Alvarez, because the numbers he would post him are pretty good.
Yeah, no, he does look really good. And I almost brought him in over Jackson going into game week 3. I find the Manchester City team really difficult to predict who's going to start.
Always.
At the moment. Always. But even with De Bruyne out, we thought maybe it would become a little bit more obvious. But I feel like it's not. And they're strengthening in the transfer window still as well. And I am going to be boring and say that after game week 5, the Champions League does start. And that is when Pep Roulette will go from high to extreme, I am sure, whether it's in defence, midfield or attack as well, which is why when I look at picking an asset, when I look at Alvarez versus a Jackson, for example, Alvarez, if he played every minute, if he played every game, would be a better asset than Jackson. And I'm not going to sit here as a Chelsea fan and tell you anything different at all.
Nice.
And when we look in midfield, if I was going to pick Phil Foden versus Maddison versus Raheem Sterling, I would say exactly the same thing. But I think we can all say pretty confidently that Phil Foden particularly is not going to play every game over the next 4 or 5 when they start Champions League. A similar case probably to be said about Julian Alvarez as well. When we get to a point when we know that he's going to start every single game, I think he's a great asset. He's a World Cup winner when he plays.
Will we ever get to that point though, Harry? Will we ever get to the point where we know he's going to play every week? We won't, right?
Well, this is it. And this is why I only have Erling Haaland in my team, and I don't plan on changing that at all over the next couple of weeks. I will continue to see Manchester City score goal after goal, and I will continue to see assets that I don't own get assists and goals. But there'll be 1 week where they don't start and I'll sit here and go, well, I told you that he wasn't going to start.
That one week you'll be smug.
Yeah, right. Exactly. And then my asset will probably blank that week anyway, and it will look like I should have bought Phil Foden after all. But I really like them. I personally play with assets that I like minutes from, which is why I'm not that hot on Martinelli anymore as well. So the Manchester City attackers are great players. They are great assets when they start, but there's enough with Champions League starting and their new signings to just put me off when we have another asset in both of those positions that I think will continue to perform well anyway.
If you're talking about nailed assets, look no further than Brighton. Although we have to talk about Brighton. We have to talk about Brighton because in the first couple of game weeks, a lot of FPL managers have gone to Mitoma and to Estupinan and to, you know, some even went to Solly March, who's been a nice actually differential for the last couple of weeks. A bit of an unexpected result at the Amex, I have to say. I thought Moyes got it tactically spot on. Brighton 1, West Ham 3. And you could see, if I look at some of the pass maps as well from that game, David Moyes tactically got it spot on. He targeted that right back area for Brighton, where Brighton, you know, and they've got all the players that I mentioned, absolutely brilliant. And certainly on the other side, Purvis Estupinan has been brilliant for us, isn't he, so far in FPL. But that right back side where they had James Milner, who, you know, let's face it, is probably in his, you know, sorry, James, if you're listening, in your twilight, he's in his twilight years, isn't he, let's face it. And it seemed like every time West Ham got the ball, they just sort of lumped it, long ball, into those sorts of areas. And now they've got Ward-Prowse and his energy in midfield. You've got Bowen, who's had a really, really good start to the season. We've got to talk about him as, you know, both of those could potentially be fighting for spots in our FPL midfield, you know, that really stacked FPL midfield that we keep discussing. And then a really nice finish from Antonio as well. It was a shock result, but tactically, Moyes got it spot on. And West Ham, I think they've potentially got to be on the radar as well. What are your FPL thoughts, not just from a West Ham in perspective, but also should we be, I won't say panicking, but should we be worried now about Mitoma and March and some of those other midfielders? Because as I keep saying, we've got loads of options right in that FPL midfield.
Yeah, starting off with West Ham, it's worth noting that they play Luton away in game week 4. So that looks like a fixture that people will definitely want to target, especially after the returns that the likes of Jared Bowen have got.
Yeah.
I still am a big fixtures person, and I look at them and see after Luton, it's City at home, Liverpool away. Then they also have Newcastle at home and Aston Villa away. All of those in their next six does put me off them a little bit when there are assets that are performing well with a better run of fixtures. So you compare, you know, Bowen being a similar price to Raheem Sterling and James Maddison. We'll come back to those two because they are the sort of hot topic boys at the moment.
Said that, Harry, sorry to interrupt you, but if you were so if you were wildcarding game week five, for example, you'd have a bit of fun with West Ham, wouldn't you? You'd go all in on sort of Antonio and Bowen and James Ward-Prowse for that Luton game, knowing that you could move them on in five if you were wildcarding.
Yeah, I think that's probably the only situation that at the moment I would buy them is if I was wildcarding going into game week five over the international break. If I was looking for a 1 week punt this week, I had a transfer, I had two transfers, I'd be going all in on West Ham this week if that was the case. But I mean, actually, to be honest, over the international break can be quite a popular place to wildcard. So there might be a reasonable amount of people listening deciding to do that. But outside of that, I probably won't. A lot of my focus in this game was on Brighton. One of the things I did at the start of the season was I backed quite heavily against Brighton, particularly their attack. So I only started with a Stupinan in game week one. And although Matoma did quite well in game week two, I went with Brian Mbeumo, who did equally as well. So actually, it's not gone too horribly wrong. The fixtures for them as well are really not great going forward now. So Newcastle, Manchester United, Aston Villa away, Liverpool and Man City all in their next six as well.
It's tough, right?
The only real favourable fixture you'd say is Bournemouth at home in game week six.
Yeah.
And again, they are leaking goals. They did it at the end of last season. They decided to change their goalkeeper going into this game as well, which after two games did feel like a little bit of a strange decision. Although they did say that there'd be rotation in goal, it felt strange to do it quite so early on when you're trying to build a little bit of solidity. Estupinan does have enough attacking threat that I think it's okay to hold him. I plan on starting him in my team this week at home to Newcastle. I don't love it, but it's one of those that it's probably not worth using a transfer to go and bring someone in to bench purposes Estupinan this week. He also has Bournemouth at home in game week six, which is good enough. But I look at the midfield and I just think there's so many routes to points. João Pedro can fall into this bucket as well, although he hasn't actually been starting anymore after game week one. There are enough options in midfield, again, that continue to do well that if you have Matoma in March, I don't think they're panic sells with a home fixture in game week four.
I don't think so.
But again, if you're looking at your midfield wanting a Raheem Sterling and you don't want to sell any of your other midfielders and you have a Matoma, for example, I'm not completely against getting rid of him as well. When you look at the likes of Brian Mbeumo, who has Bournemouth at home this week, we know he's on penalties, he's on set pieces, he's on corners as well. The routes to points with some of these players, when you compare them to the likes of Matoma, just means that I think they're going to be more consistent in their returns. Not saying Matoma's not a fantastic and great footballer to watch, by the way, but as an FPL asset with those fixtures, if you're really looking to target and try and sort of be aggressive, I think Matoma to one of those other midfielders to have a nicer run of fixtures is probably something I'd consider.
Yeah, definitely not a panic sell from my perspective. I mean, March Matoma, I mean, that even though they lost at home to West Ham at the weekend, it was still full of attacking intent. And I have to give a shout out to Areola in the West Ham goal. I think FPL on the website says nine saves, but it feels like more, right? He was absolutely inspired, wasn't he? The goalkeeper for West Ham this weekend. So, you know, very high XG, very high XGI for a lot of the Brighton players. So given that they've got those two home games coming up, I know one's Newcastle, but the other one's Bournemouth. A lot of FPL managers coming into this game week, though, Harry, did decide to panic sell some of their Manchester United assets, in particular Bruno Fernandes and Rashford. A lot of transfers out for those two. I happened to stick with Bruno Fernandes because I just thought Nottingham Forest at home was a fixture too good to sell him before. And so it proved. He got one from the penalty spot, got the assist as well. Nottingham Forest going two goals up, you know, within 5 or 6 minutes was a surprise, to say the least. And Morgan Gibbs-White popping up with two assists shouldn't go unnoted either. But Manchester United assets, what do you think now for Bruno Fernandes, for Rashford, for others, given that potentially Hoyland's going to be in the team over the next couple of weeks? The fixtures for Manchester United, okay, they've got Arsenal away in four, but after that, it's Brighton, Burnley, Palace, Brentford and Sheffield United. So in the medium term, the fixtures do look pretty good. I, for one, am going to be holding Bruno Fernandes because I just thought he got that game by the scruff of the neck. 2-0 down, he was almost like, I'm not going to accept this. This is not good enough from a Manchester United perspective. And I think his attitude and the way that he approached that game from, a, you know, in that midfield for Manchester United, I thought he turned the game. It was his attitude and his leadership. and his goal threat that really turned that game. What are you saying about Manchester United and how are you investing from an FPL perspective?
Yeah, so I have Bruno Fernandes and I have Marcus Rashford. Bruno Fernandes falls into a similar camp to Bukayo Saka that I feel like they're both on penalties. If I sell them, I'm sort of overthinking a little bit and overmanaging.
Maybe asking for trouble a bit.
Yeah,
right?
Overmanaging my team a little bit. We know that they're going to finish reasonably, you know, probably top four for both of them, if not top six. So having a sort of attacking asset from both of them is probably a good idea. So Bruno Fernandes is definitely a hold for me. His underlying data, even before this game, has been really, really impressive. So don't plan on moving off him. I do sit here with a slight smug smile on my face that I say that I think Manchester United look a slightly better outfit whilst Mason Mount was not in the starting 11 for them with Christian Eriksen coming in.
Yeah.
It did free up Bruno Fernandes. We did also see Marcus Rashford go back to the position where he's actually better in. Now, it feels strange to say I'd rather my asset play on the wing than actually play up front as the main striker. But Marcus Rashford looked a different player again now that he's out on that left.
He did.
Two assists for him as well. He's a player which I'm a little bit unsure about what to do with him in my team going forward. Because if I wanted both Madison and I wanted Sterling as well, it would have to be Marcus Rashford would be the second midfielder that I decide to sell. However, I do like what I saw from him in that game. I did like the positions. I did like how sort of more involved he was. The fixtures for him are also pretty good. They play Brighton at home after the Arsenal fixture and they're leaking goals as well, as we've just mentioned. Burnley and Crystal Palace, Brentford and Sheffield United still to come as well. So I think it might be a little bit of overmanagement if I decide to sell Rashford as well. So I plan on holding him. And the only thing is potentially if you own defensive assets, I've not been massively impressed. Casemiro's not quite been at maybe what we expected from him and what we've seen in previous seasons as well. So I think defensively, they're not panic sells. If you've got Luke Shaw, of course, he's a sell. If you've got Onana, our goalkeeper transfer is probably not what you want to make at this time in the season. But I definitely wouldn't be investing new in their defense.
Yeah, I'd agree with you on that. Casemiro's not quite looked the same as he did last season. And maybe he's just getting up to speed. And only game week three. And maybe, you know, that Manchester United midfield requires you to be all action. It requires you to be on top of your game, requires you to be super fit. And maybe he's just still finding his fitness a little bit from pre-season. But yeah, the lack of form we're seeing from Casemiro is meaning that teams are getting through Manchester United too easily. I mean, certainly the two goals at the beginning, Morgan Gibbs-White, two great assists for him. But they even had chances towards the end of the game, right? They could have nicked something from that game even late on. And you know, as a Manchester United fan, you don't want to be looking at games and going, well, we've got to score one more than the opposition because we know we're going to be conceding goals, right? So without Shaw in there and some of the others, you know, it does make them a little bit of a, you know, if not a wait and see, then you're not investing right now. I've got Onana in goal, a zero pointer for him this week. A little bit erratic is maybe the comment I'd make on him. I wouldn't necessarily say he inspired confidence throughout that game. Maybe he got a bit excited by the occasion. I don't know. But like you say, I'm not going to be spending an FPL transfer on a goalkeeper at this stage. When I come to wildcard over the next few weeks or whenever I do decide to play the wildcard, maybe I'll look at it again. But for now, I think I'll probably just stick with Onana. I don't like, you know, my goalkeeper options for next week. I think I've got him and Turner. Both have got difficult fixtures. But given that United's games from game week five don't look too bad, then I'll probably just stick with Onana. Just a couple more games that I want to discuss with you, Harry. One is what happened at St. James's Park yesterday, which we cannot come on this podcast without me discussing. What an incredible game. Comeback of the season already, potentially. Super sub Darwin Nunez popping up with two goals. My opinion on him is that even with those two goals, I don't necessarily think that that makes him an FPL asset. I think in pre-season, I was waxing lyrical about him in the fact that he was 7.5 because Klopp hasn't been playing him, right? And I don't necessarily think that he gets the start, even with the two goals here. He was the definition of an impact sub, wasn't he, in that game? And I think going forward, probably will be an impact sub still for Klopp because the move that Klopp made towards the end of that game by bringing on Harvey Elliott and Diogo Jota, that was the genius move, in my opinion. Now, Darwin's going to get the headlines. He's the name that you're going to see all over Twitter. But Diogo Jota coming on and adding that energy at that time of the game and Harvey Elliott adding energy at that time of the game. I've said before on this podcast and others that Diogo Jota is a pressing monster. That's why Klopp loves him and plays him. And off that front, sort of three or four of Liverpool, if you said to me, where would you go with your FPL pounds right now and how will you invest? Obviously, Mo Salah is not a bad pick, right? He's never going to be a bad pick.
Yeah.
But he's ticking over the sort of single digit. So I don't necessarily see that he's worth the 12.5 that you're going to pay for him in FPL. But Diogo Jota, I think he's going to get plenty more starts because Klopp loves the energy that he brings to that team. So he would be the one, if I was going to go in on Liverpool, I think I'd go for Jota, you know. But nevertheless, very pleased to see the two goals from Darwin Nunez. Talk to me about that game, not just from a Liverpool perspective, but also Newcastle, because the fixtures for Newcastle start to clear up now, right? They go away to the Amex, which, as we saw West Ham do a bit of a job on Brighton this weekend, maybe that's not such a bad fixture for Newcastle. And then after that, the next 3 or 4 weeks look really, really good for the Toon, don't they? So are you considering investing in any Newcastle assets or indeed any Liverpool on the back of the win?
Liverpool still not, I don't think. Just because the assets that I want, that I think are going to consistently return, are either too expensive at the moment in the likes of Mo Salah. So A, I don't really have a route to them in my team. And two, the returns are not really explosive enough for me to go there. The front line I like, but as you say, at the moment, I'm still a little bit unsure about exactly who it's going to be every week. Darwin is always, yeah, obviously staking a claim there, but I still don't trust it enough. And then defensively, I still am not going to be touching that Liverpool defense at the moment with the way that they are leaking goals. I still think they'll win games. I still think there'll be returns there, but it's very difficult at the moment to predict where it's going to be unless you're buying Mo Salah, in which case the explosivity is not there. I was considering Newcastle, and I was actually considering Sven Botman into my team very soon because we know Newcastle are very good defensively, but he went off after, I think, 85 or so minutes with an injury, and it didn't look necessarily a very good one either. So it will be interesting to see how quickly he comes back, because I do think it will weaken that Newcastle defense quite considerably not having him in. They have been so good defensively, and him coming in and joining that Newcastle defense has been a real reason why it has been the case. So defensively, it's a little bit of wait and see to see A, how long he's out for, B, if I want to invest elsewhere, and just see actually if it's going to just make them weaker defensively going into their nice run of fixtures. Going forward is interesting. Anthony Gordon got the goal, but I'll mention it again, and I think it will be a big impact, particularly for some of those Newcastle forwards, is the Champions League that they do have starting, right? After game week 5, when they play it.
Yeah, true enough.
Isaac versus Wilson, they are now playing a system where they're only going to be playing one of them up front. And I think as soon as that Champions League starts, we're already seeing 65-minute subs for Isaac anyway. He was the most brought-in player after game week 1. I don't think he's had a return since. When that Champions League starts, I feel like it is perfect time that he will just say, right, Isaac, Champions League, Wilson, Premier League, or it could work the other way around. And it's too difficult to predict. And I think a similar thing could happen on the wings as well. He could say, all right, Harvey Barnes instead of Anthony Gordon on that left-hand side. They could play, I don't know, Jacob Murphy on the right-hand side and give Almiron a rest for the Champions League as well. I think there is too much going on in that forward line to invest at the moment. So for me, Newcastle are a big wait and see defensively, and I'm not going to touch it. I probably avoid going forward at the moment, and a similar case for Liverpool at the moment as well. So a great game of football, but probably not one that's massively interesting for FPL for me, apart from the Botman injury.
Yeah, the only one that caught my eye was Miggy Almiron. I thought he had a good game. I think he hit the post, didn't he, in the second half. Could have had more points than his two that he got. Posted an XG of 0.59. So was in and around those sorts of areas where you'd want him, I think. But like you, I kind of look at it and go, well, yeah, I wouldn't know where to go in that front line, I don't think. So I think I'm happy to kind of wait a week, see what happens at the Amex next week with maybe a view to moving on to Newcastle in game week 5. So a bit of a wait and see. And I agree with you on Liverpool. Good game of football. But I wouldn't go investing defensively in Liverpool, particularly without Virgil van Dijk now for a couple of games as well. Liverpool's opponents in game week 4 are going to be Aston Villa. This is the team we just got to finish up on. With no van Dijk, with potentially no Konate as well, would it be madness to sell Ollie Watkins? And certainly no one's looking to sell Diaby, I don't think, going into game week 4 on the back of his performance. But Ollie Watkins, talk to me about him. He's ticking it over, isn't he? He's getting the odd assist here and there, but is that enough?
Diaby, I would definitely be holding. Watkins is an interesting one. He's still highly involved if you watch the games, but the returns haven't been there. I suppose the thing is people will be looking at people who didn't make the Watkins to Jackson switch will be wondering about whether they make it this week. So
yeah.
To be honest, I think I probably would, just because when I look at my team, I made it last week. I'm not certain that I actually want Watkins going forward. There was a part of me that thought from game week 7 or 8, when their fixtures turned, that I'll definitely want him. But the more I look at it, the more I actually think, no, I don't want Watkins. I actually want Diaby. So moving from Watkins to Jackson now, actually means that I'm quite happy in a few weeks' time to reinvest in Aston Villa, but it will probably be Diaby at a cheaper price, getting the extra point for a goal. And of course, we know that Ollie Watkins is off penalties as well, so there's a little bit less sort of route to points there. It feels like a luxury, right? If you have other transfers to make, don't go taking minus fours for Ollie Watkins to Nicholas Jackson. That's definitely not what I'm going to sit here and recommend. But if you've got maybe two transfers, you are considering what to do with your team, there's not a lot you want to do, I probably would still make that switch given the upcoming fixtures for Chelsea.
Yeah, and obviously we can't sit here and not give Matty Cash a shout out as well. An XG of 1.35 and two goals for his owners. I remember a massive haul from him. Was that last season or the season before? We got like a 28, 29 pointer or something, and he did his level best to try and match that, didn't he, at the weekend? But nevertheless, his owners will have to settle for just the 17 points. So an unbelievable performance from him. I'm looking forward to the matchup next week. So he's probably going to come up against someone like a Luis Diaz on that left-hand side. And that is going to be a fascinating battle on that side when Liverpool play against Aston Villa next game week. So yeah, shout out to Matty Cash. And if you had him in FPL, 17 points and a brilliant differential. So fair play.
Perfect. Well, I think we've spoken for quite a while, so best to wrap it up and let all the listeners get back to their days. Quick sort of discussion about our teams for next week. I plan on selling Martinelli and either bringing in James Maddison or Raheem Sterling. I think I'm going to roll the second transfer at the moment because the other transfer would be meaning either selling or benching Marcus Rashford, which I think is probably a mistake. So
I can't do that.
Yeah. So one transfer on Martinelli and I'll probably end up rolling the second one, or a certain Jordan Pickford might be leaving my team. I don't want to talk about him. Don't want to talk about him anymore as an FPL asset. But what about you?
Yeah, we didn't even go to Everton versus Wolves, did we? But yeah, Everton looking like they're having a difficult start to the season, aren't they? But I've only got one free transfer. I've still got Gabriel in my team. That needs to be sorted out, doesn't it? But do I do it by going to Gusto in at the back there and doubling up with Chilwell in the Chelsea defence? I don't mind that at all. I'd really like to spend my transfer on Nicholas Jackson up front and go probably João Pedro to Nicholas Jackson. But the Gabriel issue has got to be sorted at some stage, and it's probably going to be what I do for next week.
Amazing. So yeah, I feel like Gabriel, his time is finally up. Although, did you get anyone off your bench for him this week? After I feel like a lot of people I saw got Udogi and Gusto off their bench for him.
Well, I thought we were going to go the whole podcast without mentioning how jammy I was, but I first benched Diaby this week. So Gabriel not playing meant that I got Diaby's 12-pointer. So yes, very, very jammy. I will take it. I will take a little bit of luck and a little bit of FPL jam every now and again, Harry. So yes, thanks for bringing that up. Well, happy with that.
Unbelievable. And on that note, yeah, we'll wrap it up. We have spoken about a lot of assets that people are considering investing into their teams, but it feels like a more difficult decision deciding on which of the pretty good assets that we'll have in our teams that we actually want to take out for these new shiny toys. Of course, to help with this, Kelly, Jules and Sam will be back on Thursday with the FPL Pod. Don't forget, if you haven't already, join the FPL Pod League for this season. The code is IB3WLK. I hope you've enjoyed listening. Good luck in game week 4, and we'll be back again next week.
Bye, guys.